Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks so much for joining me again this week. We have another great show for you. We talk about all things law enforcement, and we're going to have a great guest for you as well. I want to thank those who make this this broadcast possible. JSD Protective Services is one of my sponsors, and I also want you to think about my books. I want you to check them out at Amazon.com. And now, let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The briefing room. Headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
Welcome to the briefing room where I give you my view from the blue about topics that touch law enforcement. Well, my friends, the madness has begun again. This time in St. Louis. It seems that the forces that are anti-law enforcement are always looking for something to demonstrate about and to create more and more violence using the police as scapegoats. This time, it's about the trial of a former St. Louis police officer, Jason Stockley, who was found not guilty of murder. And, of course, he is a white police officer. The suspect was black. He was a heroin dealer. He was armed with a pistol. He tried to run over the police officer. And somehow people in the St. Louis community think that that officer should have been found guilty of murder. Let me tell you a little bit more about this. I had not paid that much attention to this case until then he was found not guilty and caused riots. But this this police officer, Jason Stockley, the incident that he was accused of being a murderer in actually happened in 2011. And there were no charges. He was not found to be negligent or any of that nature, not culpable of anything. Well, after Ferguson happened, some district attorney decided that, you know what, let's take a look at that again and let's charge him. And that's what happened. They waited until after the events of Ferguson. So talk about manipulating a prosecution. Holy mother of God. I mean, could it be any more transparent? So they manipulate this prosecution. It's clearly a politically motivated prosecution. They, that being the prosecutor, claims that the officer planted a gun on this suspect after the shooting. There was no evidence to support that. That was simply surmising by the prosecution. And when the judge heard all of the evidence, the judge listened to it all. There was no jury because it was a bench trial. And he very clearly enunciated and announced why he came to the decision that this officer was not guilty. He said simply the proofs were not there. And the proofs weren't there before this prosecution. And that's why it took him 3 or 4 years to even bring it. Well, there had already been a ginned up social media. During the trial, the clergy got involved, the St. Louis clergy, who were basically saying that if this officer wasn't found guilty of murder, then there was going to be violence. This is the clergy talking. And then, after that, then you had politicians fanning the fires. Well, the judge found him not guilty. And the proverbial stuff hit the fan. Now, there's one difference between now and what happened a couple of years ago in Ferguson. In Ferguson, the governor of that of the state then was a liberal political butt kisser, and he basically withheld the sources of law enforcement, and ordered that there be basically a soft approach. And of course, what happened? Ferguson burned for weeks. There was rioting and looting and burning and shooting, and the governor, who was pulling the strings, basically kept the police from doing what they should be doing. Well, there's a new sheriff in town, so to speak, because there's a new governor, and this governor is a no-nonsense fellow. He is a former military. Either a SEAL team or a Green Beret or Special Forces, but he made no bones about it. He said, if you riot, you're not a protester, you are a criminal, and you will go out in handcuffs. And true to his word, he took the gloves off law enforcement. Now, unfortunately, the first night there were 10 police officers injured. These quote protesters unquote, once again, these punks threw bricks and bottles and rocks at the cops, and a bunch of them went to jail. Not enough of them went to jail, but a bunch of them did. And then the second night, it was the same thing. And the governor came out very, very strongly in support of law enforcement. He said that he cared about his cops, and that they weren't going to turn their backs on the people. Now, unfortunately, there was rioting. It didn't get anywhere near to the point that it happened in Ferguson, but there was some vandalism and there was some damage to police cars and businesses, and there was the town had to shut down in certain areas. They shut down some schools and some businesses. So once again, these protesters, because they didn't get the verdict that they wanted, they have tried to subvert the entire criminal justice system. You know, the system is flawed. There's no doubt about that. The criminal justice system is imperfect, but it's our system. And guilt or innocence is decided by either the trier of fact, which would be the judge, or the jury. If you don't like the verdict, okay, you want to peacefully protest, okay, I get it. But once you commit acts of violence, once you attack law enforcement, once you damage businesses and you put people out of business and you interfere with their lives, you're not a protester anymore. As the governor said, you're a criminal. And law enforcement needs to have a 100% zero tolerance for these kind of issues. And the governor activated the National Guard. Law enforcement was allowed to do their jobs. And so there have been 2 days of violence, 2 nights of violence, but nothing to the scale which it could have been. And that's because the law enforcement response was swift, and they took care of business. So I want to say to the governor of Missouri, thank you for allowing the police to do what they do best, and that is protect the community. Now, unfortunately, 2 officers have been seriously injured by thrown objects, and any injuries to law enforcement is simply unacceptable. Also, during one of this insane protest, there was a video that went viral, and this was completely manipulated by by social media, the social justice warriors. There was this woman who's 60 years old. And she egged on the police, and she told people, hey, stand behind me. They won't mess with me because I'm an old lady. She was some 60-year-old fat old lady, whatever. And when the police went, they actually went around her, but she pretended that they knocked her down. And so she fell down, and she put on this ridiculous show. And it was all for manipulation. And you know what? It worked. In some ways it worked, because the video went viral, and just to make the cops look bad, the police did absolutely nothing wrong. The happy part of the story is they did cart her off to jail, which is exactly where she belonged. But you can take a look at the video. If you go to Blue Lives Matter.blue, you can see the video over there, and it's pretty funny. But remember, there's two versions of it. There's the one that's been manipulated, and then there's the true one. Last week, a Wayzata police officer in Minnesota was killed in the line of duty. Wayzata is a small community outside of Minneapolis. Well, the funeral was held just a few days ago, and I got to tell you, I was up in Minnesota shortly thereafter, and the people of that community demonstrated their love and their respect for their law enforcement in a huge way. And the officers up there throughout that entire region felt a huge amount of pride. And I gotta say this, that those people up in Wayzata, they lined the procession route. Besides the thousands of cops that showed up, thousands of citizens lined that procession route, people of all races and creeds and colors and religions, and they demonstrated what should be demonstrated every day in America, that they appreciated, that they loved their police, and then they felt the sorrow and the loss for the officer, Bill Matthews, who gave his life in the line of duty. That really shows what most Americans feel about their police. And for that, I am grateful. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue. If you have security needs, that is, if your company needs security, we all need security, right? But if your company needs security or your business, the person you want to talk to is Doug Carter of JSD Protective Services. That's jsdprotectiveservices.com. Go check out their website. Now, I'm really impressed with their operation. I've met their folks. I've met Doug. And his commitment to the top training for these security officers is pretty impressive. These men and women that work for him are consummate security professionals. And they've got armed security. They do pretty much everything in the realm of security, which includes bodyguarding, private investigation, and they're all over the United States. So check them out, JSD Protective Services. Tell them Randy sent you. Before we take a walk into the interview room, one thing I wanted to let you know is that I recently had the honor of being a keynote speaker down in Texas. And I got to tell you that one of the things that I really enjoy is getting to meet personally with the people that listen to this radio program. So if you would like to talk to me about addressing your group, whether it is a law enforcement or a civic group or even a volunteer group, let me know. Contact me at randysutton@americaoutloud.com. Thanks. Now let's take a walk into the interview room.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. We invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com to get all the latest. Make it a daily stop and also get the app. You can go right to the App Store and download our free app, and that will put all our content right into your hands on your phones and your tablets. It doesn't get any easier than that.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a woman who has been helping law enforcement officers deal with issues for more than 30 years. Her name is Stephanie Samuels, and she is the founder and director of Copline, which is a 24-hour peer support hotline for law enforcement. Stephanie, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
You know, you've got a long history helping people with the stress issues that especially are coming with the law enforcement job. Tell me a little bit about how you got into this, and then we're going to talk a little bit about Copline.
Terrific. I actually did not grow up in a law enforcement family. However, I did grow up in a family that respected law enforcement in particular. My father was a prosecutor in Washington, and then in New York. So grew up in a family that absolutely knew right from wrong, and that was instilled in us. I ended up, went to college, went to get my first master's, and ended up spending some time with law enforcement officers.
Wait, hold on a second. Did you say your first master's?
Yes, sir.
How many do you have?
I have two.
Okay, all right. Most people don't have any, so I just found that, okay, my first master's. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
So when I was getting my first master's, I ended up doing ride-alongs out in Los Angeles with Los Angeles PD, and at the time they had a crash unit. Although I wasn't allowed to ride with crash, I was allowed to ride with other units that dealt with the gangs. This was back in the 80s, and absolutely loved it. Had an amazing time, and thought, you know what, I think I want to do this as a career. And ended up going out on a call one day that went from this being fun to the reality, truthfully, of policing. I was in my very early 20s at the time, and they used to draw straws to see who lost and would end up with me, because I was much more like Florence Nightingale than I was today. So anyway, you can imagine how much fun as a retired officer it was to have a ride-along that felt that she could rehabilitate the entire world. So started riding with one sergeant in particular, and ended up having a call, and I used to do this on a regular basis, which was awesome for me. And this one call ended up involving a gang member and trying to get backup. The officer I rode with was a sergeant. I wasn't allowed to ride with patrol, and he really wanted to get the undercover guys in plain clothes out there. And there is nobody. And he got out of the car and was running. We were in Compton at the time. And I remember, I mean, I was young and dumb. I had signed everything away. It was actually where I learned what the word stirpy meant, because I had signed my stirpies away, too. So,
I don't know what that means.
A stirpy apparently is a legal term for any heirs that I had. So I was releasing anybody.
Oh, boy. From
any type of liability, as I was out there doing what I thought was just a tremendous amount of fun. And this individual that we were running to question ended up jumping a cinder block wall, which is pretty common in that area. And I'll never forget the sergeant looking at me, and I'm telling you, we had a platonic relationship. There was nothing. I mean, this guy couldn't stay further away from me. This was not anything other than, I'm sure, me being a pain in the ass, and he had to put up with the fact that I was his ride-along. And he looked at me, and if you look into the eyes are the soul, and he was saying goodbye. I saw fear. I saw caring. I saw something I had never seen. And he looked at me, and the words that came out of his mouth were, "I'm paid to jump that wall, and they know it's on the other side, and I don't." And that moment changed me. And obviously this is probably now 40 years later, 35. And all I thought about was, could I jump the wall? And I don't mean physically. I believe physically I could get myself into shape to do pretty much anything. And did I want to? And that would really change the course of what I would end up doing in a career. Ended up moving back east, ended up getting married, ended up working in the housing projects of 6th and D, which there are more deaths down in 6th and D than any place in the country at the time. It's Alphabet City. So we, and I ran GED programs, and we're funded by the Juvenile Justice Office. And I got to see the difference in these two worlds. Never ended up becoming a police officer. Ended up with unbelievable respect and understanding that all those ride-alongs had brought me, that this was great fun for a 20-year-old girl who got to go home to her nice place that she lived, didn't have to wear a bulletproof vest to work, didn't have to put a sidearm on, didn't say goodbye to a spouse and family. This became very real after that day. And when I moved back east, like I said, I ended up working in the projects, and they always say, you know, I will tell you, I got schooled on the D. I learned more about respect than any place else I had in my life. And I also learned that the difference between cops and convicts are, at some point in time in life, somebody took a right-hand turn and somebody took a left-hand turn. In California, when I was out there, I had never met a gang member that didn't want to be a cop. And I realized I hadn't met a cop that wasn't part of a gang. We just call them FOPs, PDAs, certainly more productive. But this sense of unity, this sense of belonging, this sense of brotherhood, and this sense of being willing to die for another was really interesting in looking at these two different groups. And after spending much time down at the D and really realized that it was much more rewarding to work with cops than it was convicts, ended up moving out to Jersey and didn't want to do the commute, and went to our local police academy, and this goes back 25 years ago, and I asked the director back then, God rest his soul, I said, who does your guys' debriefings? You know, officers involved in shootings, untimely deaths, anything, who does that? And he looked at me and he kind of tilted his head, and I thought, okay, I could be speaking Californiaese, which is something that East Coast doesn't speak. So I tipped my head the other way and said, okay, you know, repeated it, and he kind of looked at me again, and he said, no one. And that really began what has been a quest for my entire career back here in back east, is to get services for officers that are involved in critical incidents, the help that they need. What I have found is that many times officers are involved in critical incidents, and it's kind of like a barrel that gets filled with water, that at some point in time, if you don't empty it, it's going to run over, and water, as you know, is just a mess. I mean, it gets into every nook and cranny, and even though you think it's dry, that the mold grows behind anything and eventually can kill you. And
that's an interesting analogy.
And that has been my thought on critical incidents, as well as just cumulative stress for police officers. So I've been honored to be able to teach at local police academies, lecture throughout the country on post-traumatic stress disorder, the importance of getting officers help after critical incidents, the importance of long-term potential counseling for these individuals. And 12 years ago, I had made the decision that I had seen too many officers that had to retire early due to both physical and psychological injuries. In New Jersey, we are blessed that if an officer is involved in a shooting or other critical incidents, They do not necessarily have to be physically injured. They can be psychologically injured. And if all three prongs of a criteria are met, they are allowed to retire with what we call a tax-free retirement. Of ours is 66 and two-thirds. And New York is 75%. It just depends where you are. But
That's very interesting, because one of the issues nationwide, I'm sure you know, is that there are many states that don't recognize post-traumatic stress disorder as a workers' compensation injury.
Correct. I'm very much aware of that. And that is something that I have also asked unions to get involved in, and they have. NAPO has been wonderful about really trying to lobby to get all 50 states to acknowledge a psychological injury. I know after the shootings, the Sandy Hook shootings, that was a huge issue out in Connecticut, was getting these officers covered, and continues to be a tremendous issue. So that is also something that is dealt with not only in my practice, but on the hotline. And 12 years ago, I had made a decision that it was imperative to look at my retirees that had retired untimely, that had so much information, wealth of knowledge, and were leaving a career that they had loved. And it doesn't necessarily have to be untimely. I mean, it also could be after 25, 35, 40 years. I mean, officers throughout this country have a mandatory retirement age of 65. So that's pretty common. So what I wanted to be able to do was to help these individuals continue to do what they love to do and to continue to help active officers. You know, a lot of the officers nationwide, which I'm sure you hear, Randy, all the time, is they were prepared for what they dealt with on the streets. They were never prepared for the internal politics and crap they've had to put up with inside of their departments.
I think so, that's probably one of the biggest issues that causes post-traumatic stress is not, I mean, of course, there is the either the incident or incidents that an officer dealt with throughout his career, but very often it's the manner in which they were treated by their own agency that exacerbates the trauma.
I have actually, in my warm and fuzzy moments, I have actually named their departments as their secondary trauma, which you can imagine goes over incredibly well.
I'm sure it does.
You know what? It is what it is. You know, these guys have given up everything, and they really believed prior to these incidents that they would be taken care of. And the fact that they are truly abandoned by their departments, by coworkers, by a system itself that they are willing to die for. One of the questions that I ask that really sometimes determines whether or not these officers are going to retire is I say to them, prior to your incident, did you believe it would be an honorable death if you died wearing the gun badge and patch in the line of duty? And every single one of them said yes. The second question is what became very difficult, is do you still feel that way today? And most of them say no. And when they say no, the issue now becomes I can't promise them that they're not going to be killed in the line of duty, and they have to make a decision of whether or not this job is now worth dying for. And when they have been treated like crap, they have been isolated. And the road to hell is paved by good intentions. I get that officers are not taught, you know, terrific communication skills, nor is it appropriate. You know, the more time you chit-chat with somebody on the side of the road, the greater chances that something's going to go wrong. But to not be able to take care of your own, you know, that to be able to deal with chiefs and to be able to stay with chiefs, you need to put on your list of things to do every week. You need to make sure you personally reach out to every single officer that is out. Or you assign them a designee that is a direct report to you, because they cannot go through the hoops that they have to go through in order to get their needs met. And I can't say every chief says, you're right, it has to be done, it has to be done. And somehow or another, something ends up getting lost. And it's horrendous for these guys. I can give you dozens of examples, but it's not worth spending time on that, as to what chiefs have done believing they were doing what was best for the officer.
Well, let's go back. So you have been as involved in mental health for law enforcement officers for decades, and you have created an organization called Copline, which is something very unusual as far as the service that it offers to law enforcement officers. Tell us about Copline.
Copline is a hotline for police officers manned by retired police officers that is strictly confidential. When this was created and the board was founded, a decision was made amongst the board members that under no circumstances would we breach confidentiality if an officer had called the line and was going to kill themselves or made gestures or what have you. And it's not that we are a cold, callous group at all. It is us deciding that the good of the one could not outweigh the good of the many. If Copline was ever known as a rescue line, which is what they're called, and that they would send somebody out to the house, they would never be trusted and it would never be called. And that I was not willing to compromise for what I believe is needed for this country and for officers to be able to call and feel that they do have a safe place that they can go to. So Copline was founded 12 years ago. It was founded as a non-rescue line, and we have trained quite a few retirees. The vetting process is a pretty stringent one, and it's important. We have made some exceptions, but very few, and that is that we have asked that a officer had been a sworn officer for a minimum of 10 years. And then there's an application that actually is online that officers or retirees can fill out. And then the vetting process begins with me, where I go over all of the documentation. Our head trainer for the hotline, we train for, it's a 40-hour-a-week, pretty intensive training that is a weed-out process, so that not everybody that has made it past the first vetting of filling out the application actually makes it through the training itself. So after I get the application goes to our head trainer, who is with the Behavioral Science Unit out in California with LAPD, Dr. Jay Nagdeman. And Dr. Nagdeman has a really unique background that nobody else in this country has, and LAPD has just been so generous to us. They put Dr. Nagdeman on loan when we did our training a few months back in San Diego. He is, he's not only behavioral science for LAPD, he had been with the D.D. Hirsch Suicide Prevention Center for many, many, many years as their director. So he has the dual knowledge of both running a hotline and that being probably one of the most utilized hotlines. And interestingly enough, that LAPD's hostage negotiators end up taking shifts on that hotline. So Dr. Nagdeman was very familiar with working with LAPD in their SWAT hostage negotiation unit prior to even going over to LAPD. So when Copline was being founded and training was going to be there, the first person that I secured was Dr. Nagdeman, because he truly is the wind beneath my wings as far as training goes. So he is the one that, after I do the initial vetting, he then gets the applications. He'll circle stuff, question stuff. I then do the second round of it. of the review, and then call the individual back if there are any questions, go over stuff with Dr. Nagdeman, and then the individual is asked if they want to then go on to the training. And the training is held in different areas depending on where our funding is and the most amount of individuals. But this last training we had from all over the United States, truthfully, that came in when it was in San Diego. So that was really exciting for us. And we had 9 retirees that we trained, and 8 of them ended up wanting and being able to get through the process. And those 8 people have been manning those lines along with quite a few others since May 1st.
So this is a fairly new operation then?
It is fairly new as far as training the retirees. That took funding. Prior to that, the lines were manned either by myself or at times other therapists that were in the police therapy field. Every now and again, they still will do, all therapists do clinical backups. So, for instance, when my retirees are on the lines, I'm typically clinical backup. If not, there's another clinician like myself somewhere in the United States that is volunteered that will also be there, so that no retiree, in case they are flustered or what have you, ever feels alone, that they always have somebody that they can call, like myself, for the support. And that you are correct, that COPLINE had been in existence for 12 years, but it really wasn't until after the Pulse shooting and then Dallas right after that, that a call for help from me really went out nationally that said, I need other people answering these lines. And I will tell you, if you build it, they will come. And we have always said that we are going to do it right, not fast, because so often people, you know, will throw up, you know, good Samaritan causes for police officers, and they just don't have enough of a foundation in place, and it no longer exists. And that was something that I wasn't willing to risk.
Let me ask you this. Approximately, how many people call into this COPLINE helpline, say weekly?
Weekly, we are averaging, it's funny, before I did the interview, I just got my latest bill, so it shows we are averaging almost 2 calls a day, which might not sound like a tremendous amount. We are a unadvertised line. We have not spent any of the money on doing any advertising. We are being found on Google searches, which is incredible to us, and then word of mouth.
I think if you talk about 2 law enforcement officers a day who are basically in crisis if they're calling you, that I think that's pretty damn good.
Thank you.
Now, if an officer is calling you and is in crisis, the peer support I can see would be very beneficial. But how about follow up?
Oh, well, that works in several ways. And again, I really do want to stress this. Should the call become disconnected, the caller found our number once, they can call back. We will not call that person back unless they have given us a number to call back. Otherwise, I do believe it's a breach in confidentiality. So if it was you, Randy, that called the line, you were having a stressful situation at home, spouse, what have you, you've called in, and you say, you know, Stephanie, I've really enjoyed talking to you. Would it be okay if you gave me a call in about a week or so? And I would say, Randy, if you give me a number to call you back at, I will be more than happy. But if it's not me that's on the line, we are all trained the same way, and I will be more than happy to have who's ever going to be on call that day call you back. Is that okay? Because the important thing is we are all trained the same way. We don't want them connecting to an individual. We want them connecting to COPLINE, because that's what we are, and we are all part of that. And each one of us might have a unique way of talking or what have you, but we have had positive experiences with everybody that answers the lines. And so you would say to me, you know, I'd really appreciate it if it's you. And I will say, I will do my best. I will look at a schedule. However, would you have a conflict if it was somebody else? And you would probably tell me no, because we haven't had anybody say yes. And then what I would do is I would say, okay, I'm going to mark down in a week to make sure who's ever on the line calls you. Is it okay to leave a message? You know, yes or no. And then that's how it goes. Now, the other thing that we make clear is, Randy, if you feel that you need to reach out to us before we reach out to you, we're always here. Just pick up the phone and call 1-800-COPLINE. Somebody will answer.
Now, that sounds fantastic. I mean, I really applaud what you're doing. I mean, we have seen, just in this last couple of weeks, we've seen more than six police officers or law enforcement officers commit suicide, and two of them in their patrol cars. This seems to be coming more and more common, and these are preventable deaths. That's what makes this so frustrating, and you're doing something about it, which I applaud.
Thank you. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, and again, I am a civilian that was unable to wear the badge, and I do believe that you're either part of the problem or part of the solution, and you just need to pick your side. And I am honored to be part of a solution, but I am truly only as good as those retirees answering the lines. I have unbelievable vigilant volunteers that are a true blessing, that not only support COPLINE, but they are trying to help raise funds for trainings. They are getting their unions involved. It is amazing. I am the most blessed woman in the world.
I really love the fact that you are taking law enforcement retirees who, as you said, bring with them a sense of mission, a sense of dedication to this field, and have that experience that they want to share while they are continuing to serve. It's just serving in a different way. They're still serving their profession by volunteering and being a counselor. How would a retiree get in contact with you to volunteer?
Several different ways. You can go on our website, and we are at www.copline.net.org.com. dot whatever is out there, and there is a section that says resources, and it will show a volunteer form. That is the first way, is to fill out that volunteer form. There's a fax number on there, there's a snail mail address. All of that can get to me, and if they are uncomfortable doing that, a lot of my retirees are older and just aren't computer savvy, then they're welcome to call me. And the office number for COPLINE is area code 732-577-8300, extension 8. And I'll be more than happy to call them back or have somebody call them back that can help them with the volunteer forms.
And you're always looking for more volunteers, correct?
We are absolutely always looking for more volunteers. It is just something that is needed. As these lines continue to get, the word gets out there, we continue to need to build, and our foundation is being built to be able to support the lines as it continues to grow, and that was extremely important to me, so that eventually what we anticipate is going to happen is the utilization is going to continue to go up, which we're seeing, is that the country will be then divided up into X amount of regions, call will come in, and then depending on what part of the country, it will just then be routed to a retiree that is taking calls in that part of the country. It's always been asked of me is, you know, are you at an office or what have you? And the answer is no, that a retiree has a number that we transfer the COPLINE phone number to. And so that retiree has, you know, their cell phone, their home number, whatever it is that they have that we've transferred it to, that they then are on call, you know, for, it's typically a 12-hour shift. at whatever line we have designated or they have designated to be the one, so that you don't have to sit at home, you don't have to be, you know, in your office, in wherever, that you are mobile.
Right, and clearly this isn't a very time-consuming kind of assignment. I mean, these calls come in fairly infrequently, but they are critical calls when they do come in.
Absolutely. Our average call is 28 minutes. We just divide it up. So that is our average call. But we can have calls that are 5 minutes and calls that are 3 hours. So it just depends on what's going on. And should that officer, and you were touching on this before, need a referral, is that what we are creating? And this I also really ask your listeners, if they know of any therapist that they have trusted, to please let Copline know who they are, because what we are attempting to do has never been done, which is build a reliable, well-vetted referral list for any caller in this country to be able to get a referral that is trusted. So although there's tons of therapists out there, Joe Shit the Ragman cannot do this job. They just can't. And an officer might be willing to make one phone call and go in to see a therapist once, but I know damn well they're not doing it twice.
Well, I mean, you're hitting every button here. First of all, Copline itself is a tremendous resource for all law enforcement officers. And I want to stress, if you are a law enforcement officer and you are having issues that you need to talk to somebody about, a peer is a phenomenal resource because they have been in your shoes. Contact Copline. Feel free. What is the phone number?
It's 1-800-267-5463, which literally spells out Copline.
1-800-COPLINE. That's pretty easy to remember. And if you are in a situation where you want to talk to somebody, you want to do it anonymously, this is a fantastic resource for you. And if you are a retired law enforcement officer and you want to participate and become a peer counselor, make sure that you contact Stephanie at what number, Stephanie?
Area code 732-577-8300, extension number 8.
And they can also go to copline.org and see what's going on there, as well as contact you through copline.org.
Correct. I am a director at copline.org is my email address.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, once again, Stephanie, I really appreciate you coming on to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. What you're doing is so necessary, and I appreciate you for all of your efforts and dedication, quite literally for decades, to the men and women of American law enforcement.
Thank you for all that you have done and continue to do for those that wear that badge.
Thank you, Stephanie. If you have security needs, that is, if your company needs security, we all need security, right? But if your company needs security or your business, the person you want to talk to is Doug Carter of JSD Protective Services. That's jsdprotectiveservices.com. Go check out their website. Now, I'm really impressed with their operation. I've met their folks. I've met Doug. And his commitment to the top training for these security officers is pretty impressive. These men and women that work for him are consummate security professionals. And they've got armed security. They do pretty much everything in the realm of security, which includes bodyguarding, private investigation, and they're all over the United States. So check them out, JSD Protective Services. Tell them Randy sent you.
I recently had the honor of being a keynote speaker down in Texas,
And I got to tell you that one of the things that I really enjoy is getting to meet personally with the people that listen to this radio program. So if you would like to talk to me about addressing your group, whether it is a law enforcement or a civic group or even a volunteer group, let me know. Contact me at randysutton@americaoutloud.com.
We are one of the fastest growing podcast and talk radio networks in the world. You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. We stand proudly with the men and women who serve in our armed forces and our law enforcement heroes. Thank you for being part of our family. And we'll see you back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Well, looking good and feeling good are not exactly the same thing. It's just like a car. It may look good from the outside, but what's the inside look like? More importantly than that, what's the inside of your cells look like? That's a question you need to ask yourself. Well, when I started taking Healthy Cell just a few months ago, it has changed my program. I mean, it's boosted my energy. I sleep better, sharper focus. I feel healthier, and hopefully we'll all live longer with improved cells. Well, 90-plus nutrients infused into every cell of your body. Well, this is an exclusive offer for Friends of America Out Loud. You can try it today free. When I say free, I mean free. It's our Healthy Cell Pro 7-Day Sample. Free shipping, no risk, no obligation, no credit card required. So this is a complimentary gift from America Out Loud. You can go to healthycell.com/outloudsample or just go to americaoutloud.com and click the large banner ad, and our complimentary gift will be on its way to your home.
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we honor those law enforcement officers who have given their lives in the line of duty. This week I have one name to read. It's Roberto Medina Mariani of the Puerto Rico Police Department in Puerto Rico. Agent Roberto Medina Mariani was shot and killed while attempting to take action during a robbery while off duty at approximately 10:30 p.m. He was inside a restaurant in the Magallanes neighborhood in Ponce, Puerto Rico, when three subjects committed an armed robbery of four victims in front of the building. The subjects then entered the restaurant in an attempt to rob more people. Agent Medina Mariani observed the robbery and identified himself. The subjects opened fire and shot him. Despite being mortally wounded, he was able to return fire and wounded one of the men. The wounded suspect was taken into custody. The other two men were arrested a short time later. Agent Medina Mariani was a U.S. Army veteran. He was a second-generation police officer and had served with the Puerto Rico Police Department for 6 years, was assigned to the 258th Precinct. He is survived by his wife and two children. Agent Roberto Medina Mariani of the Puerto Rico Police Department, Puerto Rico, end of watch, Monday, September 11th, 2017. This marks the, at this point in the calendar, a total of 93 law enforcement officers have died in the line of duty this year. This is about on track with exactly what happened last year. We have seen gunfire deaths at 33 police officers, and 35 were killed in car accidents. The others were in other methods of death. But each of these officers gave their lives in the line of duty. May they rest in peace. I want to thank you for joining me on this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. You can find me at Facebook. If you look under Facebook and you see Randy Sutton Public Figure, just like that or follow it, and you can see everything that I write and post. You can communicate with me there as well. I answer all of my messages personally. You can also find me at Twitter at LT Randy Sutton, LT Randy Sutton at Twitter. And you can find my books at Amazon.com. I have 4 books, and I think you'll like them. A Cop's Life, True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, True Blue to Protect and Serve, and The Power of Legacy. I appreciate the fact that you spend a little time with me and you support law enforcement. If you didn't, you wouldn't be listening to this broadcast. We are going to be making a great difference in the lives of law enforcement officers. I'm going to be making a special announcement very soon, and I'm going to need all of your help in helping to create a foundation that I will be talking about later, which will touch the lives of thousands and thousands of law enforcement officers and their families. So, once again, thanks again, and I'll see you next week.